1995 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 220, Relief Society as a Consciousness-Raising Organization, The Case of the Women's Literacy Effort, by Bonnie L. Mitchell Green.
Academically underprepared, illiterate, to do it for himself. He reached out and helped, or they, and immediately his feet and ankle bones received strength, and he, leaping up, stood and walked and entered with them into the temple. I think there the purpose, we minister in order that we may be able to enter the temple together, to enter the most sacred places as a community, of loving community. Then the last part, he entered with them into the temple, walking and leaping and praising God. As we move forward and are healed, as our basic needs are met, including the need to be able to read and write, we have great joy. Okay, the second pertinent experience occurred as a byproduct of the performance of my normal responsibilities as a professor of sociology. I had done a little extra reading in preparation for a classroom lecture on international stratification. I teach stratification, a class system within the U.S. as part of a social problems course, and I also spend at least a day or two on the stratification in the world system and the core countries that get the lion's share of all the resources and the periphery countries that are struggling along. But it didn't dawn on me until I was standing in front of one of my classes talking about how if you taught women in third world countries to read and write, it empowered them, fertility rates drop, levels of health and nutrition go up, women start to feel like they have more choices, they start to understand that they can know about more options and that they can then make wiser choices between among the options that they become aware of when they become literate. In case I run out of time, I have to say this right now. In Gordon B. Hinckley's talk in March of 92, which was a celebration of the sesquicentennial of the Relief Society, he talks about this great... No, I can't do that. Now, a great new project is to be undertaken. It is a practical and much-needed part of this 150th anniversary celebration, but its consequences will go on and on and be felt in the lives of generations yet to come. It is a program to teach those who suffer from functional illiteracy. It is designed to bring light into the lives of those who can neither read nor write. So far, so good. I guess the thing, having been in Latin America and third world countries, I think more about being able to read the directions on infant formula so that your child gets nourished properly. He goes on to talk about tragic, but his idea of tragic is denied the opportunity to become acquainted with history and the great minds of the past, not reading the daily newspaper, etc. So I guess I just take a little different tack on what's tragic, and one that comes from my experience working among people who are worried about survival, day-to-day kind of survival. As I was talking in front of my class in South Korea to people in the military primarily, the realization set in. The women who lead the Relief Society are truly inspired. There is virtually nothing more powerful that can be done to improve the lives of people in less developed countries than teaching the women to read and write. So I came to my testimony of literacy through RFUSA or through my professional experience, which is not unusual for me. Okay, briefly, consciousness-raising organizations. Normally can be defined as a group that increases awareness of one's situation as a member of an exploited group of people. I was thinking of both the National Organization of Women, traditional feminist organizations, and small women's consciousness-raising. The idea is that if women just get together and talk about their experiences, they will eventually come to recognize their common situation as oppressed members of society. Oh, that happened to you, that happened to me too, that's not right, you know. Then with that recognition or raised consciousness of the daily, mundane, and pervasive ways in which women are treated as second-class citizens, not treated with respect in the academic and business sectors, steered away from career ambitions requiring extensive math science backgrounds, socialized to be nice rather than honest, and to be self-sacrificing to the point of not having separate identities. With this awareness, women would be motivated to change the world. They would seek to change laws as well as personal practices towards building a more egalitarian society. So groups such as NOW and other feminist consciousness-raising organizations are founded at the roots, at least in some respects, interests. And the organizations do not work if women either have not experienced or do not recognize their own experience of being deprived, exploited, or oppressed. And one could argue that women's experience among race-ethnic groups within the U.S. or in other countries is more oppressed as a people instead of oppressed specifically for being female. Recognize racial oppression first because it's the most salient. Or economic oppression as a family unit, perhaps. I'm not going to do that. More recently, we've seen the growth of a second type of women's organization, which I will loosely term women's spirituality groups. These tend to be less formal in their organizational structure, less likely to be tied to national organizations, less likely to keep membership records and have laws and bylaws and all that kind of stuff. The content of these groups varies widely, from goddess worship to feminist readings of biblical texts to environmentally sensitive feminist concerns about Gaia or Mother Earth, to followers of lunar calendar who pay close attention to their own bodily ebbs and flows in connection with the phases of the moon. There's all sorts of stuff going on under sort of the loose rubric of women's spirituality. The net impact of most of these groups seem to be a positive valuing of women's experience of the divine in its multifaceted aspects. And I'm reminded of the book, The Feminine Face of God, which I heard somebody comment on that it was messy, and I thought, no, it has glorious diversity, because I loved it. Anyway, well, I think these organizations are wonderful, and I personally have benefited from the healing, affirming function that they serve for many women. They do not generally tend to lead toward organized, sustained efforts to help those outside their own groups or the outside sphere of acquaintances and friendships that are somewhat class biased. The Relief Society, on the other hand, is founded on the ideal that charity never faileth. This is the opposite of self-interest. It's a mandate to actively love beyond the borders of our own organization. So how do you raise consciousness or awareness of the needs of others, perhaps beyond our own circle of friends, such as the needs of some to learn to read and write or of others to do so or to improve their education, in such a way that it will motivate sustained efforts? And this is one of the things that Elaine Jack has stressed repeatedly, is that this is a long-term effort. It's not going to get solved immediately. We're in this for the long haul. How do you teach women to practice a love that empowers others? Well, Joseph Smith said, I teach them correct principles and they govern themselves. And I believe that in a similarly inspired fashion, the Relief Society has issued a short, 2-page set of guidelines and requested that individual sisters assess local needs, pray, and act according as the Spirit directs. It seems that the major difference between Relief Society and other women's consciousness-raising organizations is that Relief Society is founded on love and service and reaching out, and also the temple or covenanted promise to share your talents and whatever you have with others. Now, I was going to do this section on the continuing emergence of the literacy effort, but I'm running out of time, so I will skip through this rather quickly. I'll just say that it hasn't emerged at all in some places, and that's my frustration. I was in South Korea, and I saw the video, and I went, wow. You know, the 10-minute part where they've got translations from different women all over the world doing a marvelous variety of things. And I went to my Relief Society president, there was one, and said, you know, what are we doing with literacy? And her response was, well, I haven't heard very much about that. And I could have pushed it, and maybe I should have, but during the last 8 weeks I was there, I taught 5-semester courses. So I didn't. I knew that if I pushed, I would wind up doing literacy in addition to the other things. Let me just say that I believe that, and I have some substantiation for this, that the origin of this literacy effort actually comes from already established programs or guidelines that the church has. I was told to pick up Providing in the Lord's Way, which is the welfare handbook, and the first part, the first thing that they mention in becoming self-sufficient is education. And under that it says, improve our ability to read, write, and do basic math, study the scriptures and other good books. Now what the Relief Society did was they expanded that a little bit, and they have a twofold purpose. The first one is basic literacy, and that's where people, like in the U.S., get stuck. They do a needs assessment, everybody can read and write, we're off the hook. We don't have to do that. So I actually was at the Relief Society building, and one of the docents, there are like stake presidents in this area who volunteer, stake Relief Society presidents, said, oh, we don't have anybody who's illiterate in our stake, so we're not doing that. But the second fold, which says right here in this two-page guidelines, is to encourage members to study the gospel and improve themselves and their families throughout their lives. And there's very good scriptural backup. You know, the DNC 88. I always think of gynecology, sorry. Verses 77 through 80. Let me just paraphrase that real quickly. You're supposed to learn of things in heaven and in the earth and under the earth, things that have been, things that are, things that must shortly come to pass. Looks like they're trying to cover everything, right? Heaven and earth and under the earth, past, present, future, at home, abroad. So we have a scriptural mandate to continue to learn after we learn to read and write. And that's stated in the guidelines as supposed to be part of the literacy effort. So anyway, they started with the welfare and just said, I think what happened actually is that the Relief Society took this seriously. And whereas this had perhaps been applied more within the U.S., I think Relief Society sisters said, women in the third world need to have this, need to be able to read and write too. I think they actually took seriously what was already written here. And there's other stuff. Let me see if there's anything else I need to say. Probably not. Oh, this is the first mention in an official church publication, and it's on page 16 of the welfare handbook, where it says that the bishop may call welfare specialists, and it lists a whole, such as employment, improving nutrition, storing food. You get food storage specialists in a lot of words, but it's got improving literacy right there, along with these specialists that bishops can call. Whoa, now that I've lost my place, let me just go forward. The emphasis of Relief Society leaders has been intentionally placed on the literacy effort rather than on a literacy program. Although the distinction may at first seem to be merely semantic, the immense variety of different kinds of projects currently in progress demonstrates the significance of the careful naming. The purpose of the Relief Society was not to create another program for all women to be responsible for carrying out with predetermined policies, guidelines, procedures, and etc. There are intentionally no prefabricated policies and procedures. There is, rather, a two-page set of guidelines which leaves most of the responsibility for what literacy efforts will look like up to local leaders. So rather than, in my perspective, the all-too-common top-down modus operandi, wherein leaders in Salt Lake, Respiration, and local leaders are responsible for implementing revealed programs. That's an exaggeration, I know that. The Relief Society has taken a different approach. They have, in essence, said, we feel that literacy is crucial for women's continuing development in the gospel and in the church, but we're not going to tell you what you need to do in your ward or stake. It's up to you to pray, get your own inspiration, and we sincerely hope that you will. This strategy in itself can be empowering to women at the grassroots level because it acknowledges that, one, local Relief Society leaders are capable of receiving divine inspiration directly from the Lord about what should be done in their own wards and stakes. Indeed, the lack of specific programmatic guidelines, presupposes a firm expectation that individual women not only can, but will receive such guidance. Second, Relief Society presidencies also retain most of the decision-making authority regarding how literacy efforts will be implemented. And third, there is not likely to be much criticism for programs poorly managed, but rather encouragement for whatever is attempted. Thus, the guilt factor is substantially reduced, although I stick it in a little every once in a while. Also, the mere fact of being able to function within the church structure as women without predetermined expectations of what will be done or how could possibly be, a little sarcastic here, One of the most innovative and liberating experiences many Mormon women have experienced in recent decades. Excuse that. Okay, definition of literacy effort. According to, this is two pages, two sides of one page. It's available at no charge to the Church Distribution Center. They were out. This I got like the last copy, but they have more. The Gospel Literacy Effort is an ongoing plan to help individuals learn to read and write so they can better understand the Gospel and participate in all aspects of Gospel living. Now, I see that, again, as empowering. It wants all women to be able to participate in all aspects of Gospel living, not to be limited by your class, your background, your lack of opportunity. Again, the mission was twofold. The first was basic literacy. The second was the DNC 88, all-encompassing, keep learning. Ongoing process is stated several times. It's not a short-term, quick-fix kind of thing. Optional, flexible, they've tied in, they cite Gordon B. Hinckley in the very first section, so there's an appeal to priesthood authority right away. Reliance upon church welfare principles, reliance upon individual responsibility, reliance upon family responsibility involvement. If you look at the welfare handbook, those terms will ring familiar to people who are familiar with the welfare program. So they framed it within an already existing structure. I guess the one problem I have with the way part of this, what it says is that, the Stake Relief Society president works under the direction of stake priesthood leaders. This assignment is added to her current duties in Relief Society Handbook, page 11. If you look in page 11, there's nothing there about literacy. We're using a 1988 publication. I'm not sure why we haven't got a new one that's got literacy in there, because literacy was introduced in 93 at the latest. This was out by 93. We've still got old manuals, okay? And it doesn't say anything about literacy in here. It's not in the box that outlines welfare, education, and homemaking. It should be under the education counselor, just for literacy. But here it says this: the stake education counselor has these duties, and it lists it like you're supposed to add it in, or like we used to do with our scriptures, and add in the newer parts. The same thing for the ward leader. That's on page 16. The ward education counselor has these duties, and it outlines specifically what they are. But you have to have this because it's not in here. Okay. Troublesome part for me is the constant deference to priesthood authority. Priesthood leaders should oversee the gospel literacy effort. I mean, it's been labeled as a Relief Society initiative. It says so in the Ensign published Church Efforts to Improve Literacy. The Church's gospel literacy effort, announced in December 1992, has the potential to touch members worldwide. Because it was initiated through the Relief Society, the Ensign talked with Relief Society General President Elaine Jack to learn more about it. And she's really sharp. She's got really important things to say. For instance, the United Nations report tells us that there are nearly 1 billion illiterate people on Earth. Almost two-thirds of them are women. Yet literate women are better prepared to provide healthy living conditions in the home to help their children learn gospel principles. Notice this mixing of temporal and spiritual. I think they go together. Think they're on the right track here. Also within the U.S., there's functional literacy. It tends to be more about the fourth grade level. When literacy is limited to this extent, people are not able to enjoy the spiritual feast of the scriptures. I'm skipping around. Our primary focus will be on women, because worldwide they have a great need. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement, and I like it. Also, there's a recognition that these women are not stupid. They are not inexperienced in life. He says they may be beginning readers, but they are not beginning thinkers. And the approach that the English version of the training tapes uses is a whole language approach, which lets people bring their life experience to bear on what they read in the scriptures, so that you value their experience while they're learning to read. The Spanish version, which I watched the training tape, is more phonetic and is an older, much older version, and a little bit more problematic for me. Okay. Question: how is the church's literacy effort to be directed? Elaine Jack. Through the priesthood. At the local level, it is under the direction of the bishop or branch president, operating through the ward or branch council. So if you want some place to go to complain, it's to your bishop, Okay? Why don't your Relief Society leaders have the guidelines? Because your bishop and stake presidents probably got them and didn't pass them along like they were supposed to. Maybe. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe the Relief Society leaders got them and didn't read them either, or thought it's, you know, something to be stuck in the back of the book. You know, I mean, there are all sorts of possibilities. I'm going to skip that part. Another, this is troubling to me. As a Relief Society presidency, we like to hear these stories. We hope people will send them to us. Evidently, there's no organizational mechanism for collecting data from the Relief Societies on what's going on in local literacy efforts. So you have this a couple times. I think it's in another article. I've seen it at least. Oh, it's at the bottom of these guidelines. The Relief Society General Presidency would like to know about your literacy efforts. There's an organizational problem if the presidency does not have means to get the information and know what's going on with the program they're trying to implement. About your gospel literacy efforts, your experiences, and the accounts of individuals involved. This information will help improve the gospel literacy effort. Mail information to Gospel Literacy, Care of Relief Society, 76 North Main Street, Salt Lake City. Okay. okay, next question to Elaine Jack. How can priesthood leaders help in this effort? See, the men are still thinking they're supposed to help. They're not really directing. First, it's important that after their review, and their review of these guidelines, they put the material about the gospel literacy effort into the hands of their Relief Society leaders as soon as possible. So maybe the bishops are just busy and haven't read it, and so they can't give it to their leaders until they read it first. This part, sorry. Then, this is Elaine Jack speaking about priesthood leaders. They will want to follow up regularly, discussing and coordinating plans with Relief Society leaders and correlating efforts through the ward council. Her idealism outdoes mine. Maybe that's why she's president. And maybe you have to believe in the impossible in order to do that job. Yes, if priesthood leaders thought about it sufficiently and prayed with sincere intent, I'm sure they would get inspired direction and want to do the right thing and want to do the follow-up work. But how do you get them motivated to care enough about these issues to really ponder and pray about them in the first place, especially when it hasn't received major general conference attention since it was announced? I'm going to do this analogy, and it's going to be on tape, but oh well. I think it might be similar to, how do you get President Hinckley to pray about knowledge of our Mother in Heaven? It's a need many of us feel, but that need is not as likely to be directly experienced by males, and therefore not as likely a subject for them to think that they should spend a lot of time thinking and praying about and trying to get revelation concerning. And I'm reminded of the parable given by Jesus in Luke chapter 18, where it speaks of a widow and a judge who feared not God or men. And it, right after, it says that Jesus spoke this parable intentionally to the self-righteous who despised others. Okay, what, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. This judge feared not God or men, I think kind of full of self-importance. The widow, and I think the widow is a perfect symbol of powerlessness in traditional Jewish society, didn't even have the husband to have power through in that context. So powerless, person at the bottom, bugs the judge and says, "Avenge me of mine adversary." And the first response of the powerful male figure is, "No, forget it." So I think that in our efforts, first response may be negative or non-existent. Nothing may be out there. But on second thought, he does it. And why does he do it? Because he didn't want to be pestered. So I think there's a pattern here and a model that we can follow. And sometimes they do it for the wrong reasons. But that's okay to get things going, I think, because I really believe that once you're participating in something that's inspired and you're praying and you're trying, then you get more in line and start doing it for the right reasons and feeling good about what you're doing. And then the last part, in Jesus' interpretation of this parable, was, "Shall not God avenge his own elect?" And I can't help but think of Emma when I think of elect. I need to leave some time for question or comments here. I don't want to. Elaine Jack has said that this is a long-term effort, and I believe that she is on target and right to acknowledge that this is not going to be something that is quickly accomplished. But I also worry. That's sort of part of my nature. It could also be used as a rather ready-made excuse for not moving forward more efficiently in the present, like we would if Relief Society was empowered and totally in charge. They gave me this at the Relief Society office, which says purpose and goals of Relief Society are to, and it's got six basic areas which are also in the handbook, but it doesn't mention literacy once. And if literacy is to be a major effort, it needs to be stated clearly. And, I mean, it fits into all of these things. Visiting teachers should be caring about the literacy of their visiting teachees, and welfare and homemaking meetings can include it, and all those kind of things, but it doesn't say it, and so I think it would be helpful if it was said. Let me conclude so that there'll be at least a few minutes for questions. Oh, well. So here you have a women's organization embedded in a patriarchal religious structure, a women's organization which has been stripped of its own publication, the Relief Society magazine, or means of directly communicating with its members, since it doesn't go General Relief Society, Stake Relief Society, Ward Relief Society like it used to. It goes more through the priesthood side. An organization which has had its independent budget taken over or prohibited. Remember Relief Society bazaars, and that the Relief Society built buildings and stored wheat and did all this stuff before the brethren got in charge of it or whatever. An organization which does not have its own semi-annual meetings, as do male priesthood holders. And yet, in spite of all these handicaps, to my way of thinking, the Relief Society has again, and I mention again because we have a history, women were the initiators of primary, women were the initiators of storing food, women, we have a history of implementing the important projects. The Relief Society has again undertaken what to me seems to be the most significant effort of this decade and dared to believe that women worldwide would heed the call and that miracles would happen. And I'll close there. Three. Not most. I don't know. I don't have that information. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yes. Why don't you let me answer one because I'll forget the first one. Can I answer that and then we can go? Okay. There's a videotape from the women's conference and it's got those translations. Also, in the Relief Society building, they have these notebooks that have descriptions that people have sent in from different wards and stakes, and there are all sorts of ideas. There's a grandma's lending library, and there's book bags, and there's, you know, all sorts of innovative, creative things for U.S. stakes to encourage people to read and keep reading good books. So the Relief Society office has, now I would warn you that it says do not Xerox. But you can go and take notes, so you have to plan on paying for parking or whatever for a little while because it's slow to take notes on all of it.
Okay, my second question is, I think, short story about the Relief Society about losing violence to the booking.
Let me tell you. Yeah, okay, because it's local, okay. In the guidelines, it says community resources. You may use some community resources. Governments and private agencies offer literacy programs in many communities. Before suggesting that members use these programs, make sure they are not too expensive, that they are based on sound educational principles, that they are generally in harmony with gospel principles. Be careful not to become too closely affiliated with any one community program. So I would imagine that they're following that guideline about not becoming too closely affiliated, although in different areas, different things are going to be available. Some have community schools. Some have different ways of organizing that reach communities in different areas. So the idea is find out what's in your community and use it, and you may need to supplement it, or you may need to provide babysitting so people can go to it. Yeah. So the church will not take a stand in terms of saying, use this organization nationwide, and they won't. Right. No, and they're cautioned not to. And there are political and tax and I'm sure other reasons why it's not appropriate to do that. No, it's primarily aimed at church members. And that was a concern to me because it says assess the needs of members. So the idea is people who are already converted but cannot participate fully in the gospel because perhaps they can't read the lesson manual, so they can't teach the lessons as well. So the primary aim is toward members, but it's not exclusive. Again, it's, you know, there may be this member and she has a friend, and so why not teach, you know, the three of them at the same time? Also, the ideal is one-on-one tutoring kind of thing as opposed to a large class. And let me say one other thing really quickly because it's important and I forgot. And that is that the literacy effort as initiated by the church has much greater potential for long-term impact because what normally happens in literacy programs, the adults are ashamed of not being able to read, especially in more developed countries, and they don't want to admit it, and it's literacy is a long, slow process for a lot of people, and so what normally happens is people will drop out after two or three times in a regular program, and if they don't see immediate economic return, they don't stick with it. Within the gospel context, you have the notion and the solid belief that Heavenly Father wants you to grow and progress, and He will help you, and you will have the Holy Ghost to help you learn to read and write, and you have the support of loving women who are going to stay your friends, and so there are all sorts of reasons why within the church it has much more potential to succeed than elsewhere. Yes, even here in Salt Lake there are refugees. And I have a cousin who was involved in 1 or 2 hours a week working with a refugee woman to teach her. And it may have been ESL, and there's some political hassle over bilingual versus ESL and all that kind of stuff. But working with her to help her learn to read and write so that she could survive here in the U.S. So my perspective is that there are people everywhere, but they are not going to all necessarily volunteer, yeah, I'm illiterate, help me, because that's a shameful thing here. And there are migrant farm labor camps that are not very far from here. There are people, there are lots of people in our probably next door or even in our own families who could use improvement in literacy. And it's a matter of being able to sense the need and being sensitive in the way that it's provided so that it's not condescending, I think. Let's see, you and then you. We got to get out of here pretty quick. System training for English, because it's whole language and it's state of the art. That's for the teachers. Right. I think we can provide it if we want to. All right, let me take this one question really quick and let me just respond to that. And that is the CES, Church Education System, there were some people there who hung on to this literacy thing even when it wasn't a popular part of Church Education System. And their English, it has a teacher's manual and they have a training tape so you can train people who have no skills in teaching to be able to teach literacy and a student manual. And I imagine that just like the seminary program and those things are pretty well structured, it's probably just in its initial stage so there's not enough. But at least that first section through that first manual, if you can get people that far, that's a start and that's pretty well structured. Let me just take this and I'd be happy to talk to you more after real quick. Oh, there was. Good. Okay. My funny thing that happened, I was talking to a board member, and she thought, oh, that was established a couple years ago. And I said, no, here's the letter. It wasn't established in March. But I'm glad that it was in the newspaper. Okay. Well, now it just needs to get to all the bishops and state presidents who aren't in Utah.
One more thing. I come from a long line of women in the church who've been asserted in and produced society presidents. And I've gone through the process of putting the names and forcing them into the changes. But in my board now, we've got a former Reduced Society president who's now the activities director. She reruns the board. She wants to do something, she does it. If she needs money, she asks the bishop.
More power to her.
It's kind of a lesson in service, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than being passive and sitting back, you know, you can
go out and make it happen. Good. I agree. Thanks.
I finished the PhD. I got Spanish and sociology in South Korea, and then I got interviewed.
And did you get married?
No. Residence. I'd like to write about this. You know what? I think it would be
I have some stuff written.
I'll give you my art card.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you still do massage, too?
Yes, do I, every day.
I need one. Real bad.
Call me. There's my number.